Amen. Let's start off with 2 Samuel, chapter 6. It's page 327 in the Hebrew text. Okay, everybody there? Chapter 6, verse 5. What happened was the Ark of the Covenant was where the priests or the prophets would have met, more like where Yahweh was. Yahweh dwelt between the two cherubim. So here's the Ark. The Philistines captured it. David was returning the Ark of the Covenant. This is like where Yahweh lived. It's a very joyous time. And so here in chapter or verse 5, if somebody would read 5 through 7.
I will.
So he's finally returning the Ark of the Covenant. I think it was 40 years. Okay? Go ahead.
And David and all the house of Israel dancing for joy before Yahweh with boldness and with songs and with
lyres.
Lyres and with harps and with timbrels and with sistrums and with signs.
Symbols.
And when they came as far as thirst for of Nechom, Uzzah thrust forth his head into the ark of Yahweh and took hold of it. The oxen were arrested. Then was kindled the anger of Yahweh against Uzzah, and Yahweh smote him there for the error, so that he died there by the ark of Yahweh.
Elijah, read verse 8. So this was a very sad moment. You can think of like maybe a lightning, almost, I like to imagine lightning striking this guy. Everybody's singing. It's like a marching band for Yahweh, like church. The Ark of the Covenant's on a cart. It starts falling, and the guy tries to catch it from falling off his box. When he touches the Ark,
he dies.
Yahweh's anger, and boom, he's dead. That went from a very happy time to this. Now read verse 8.
It was a sadness unto David, for that Yahweh had broken in with a breach against Uzzah. Therefore called he that place Perez Uzzah, as it is called until this day.
Verse 9, and David was afraid of Yahweh on that day and said, how can the ark of Yahweh come unto me? And, okay, is that confusing? Mm-hmm. Yahweh's box is about ready to fall off the cart. The guy goes to catch it and then he dies for it. You think David's confused? And so this teaching is going to be on no excuses. And David's confused. What's going on? Why does the guy die? What happened? So they stopped everything. We'll turn to 1 Samuel chapter 15. And don't let me forget about us being the temple, the Naos. Towards the end, if you guys can remind me about that. About this guy touched the temple of Yahweh. Boom! He got smoked. Like, I think of like a lightning strike. Bow! Remind me that. Like, we're going to go to 1 Corinthians that towards the end. I didn't write it down. I'm just reminded it. So 1 Samuel chapter 15. So what the heck happened there? Yeah. Does that seem right, Esther? Does that seem nice?
No.
David, the guy that's trying to help King David out, dies?
Trying not to.
That seems very confusing, right? Were their intentions good?
Yep.
Yes. Were they trying to bless Yahweh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they were throwing a party for him. And somebody died. Good intentions, good motives, their heart's in the right place. Something's wrong. 1 Samuel chapter 15, verse 22. Page 304. And a good thing to learn, even when the guy Uzzah died, if we only think about this life as all you get, that's really confusing. Sometimes even in the Word, you'll read about somebody's life being this long and they're snuffed out. That doesn't seem right. How about Uriah the Hittite?
Yeah.
What did he do wrong? He's one of David's mighty men. King David steals his wife and then he dies. But we remember that this life is this big. And we're comparing this life compared to billions and billions and billions and billions of years. And so even like Uriah the Hittite, Yahweh can compensate for that guy. His life was snuffed out. And we get to read about righteous people dying prematurely like Stephen. That doesn't seem right, does it? Yahweh can compensate. Wait till we get to see their mansions in paradise.
Yeah.
Wow, that's his state? Yeah, that's Uriah the Hittite. He owns all of California and Colorado. I guess he made out. Is Yahweh going to come and say, I think about a parent. Let's say I'm your dad, and I find out that Elijah stole your birthday cake and ate the whole thing.
What kind of birthday?
The birthday cake's gone. Okay, so we come home, it's still her birthday, but there's no cake. Because he ate it, he's grounded, but she lost her cake. Is that justice?
Nope.
Not necessarily. She's still one without. If I was her father, could I make up for that cake? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sure.
I guarantee it. And while we're on that, I want to give a neat testimony. Tomorrow's my birthday. Last night I got home extremely late, and there was taped to my front door a card and a candy bar, Medrex bar, for my birthday week. Inside the card was from Esther. Esther made me a card and taped to my front door. I'm getting home at 1 o'clock in the morning or something because I forgot to do my shopping after the K-State game. And there's a dollar bill floating around in the wind on my front door. What in the world is that? I walk up and I grab a card and a dollar bill. And I read it, and here's from Esther giving me one of her dollars. I almost started weeping when I got it.
Yeah.
Do I have a dollar? I got lots of dollars. I got thousands and thousands of dollars. But a dollar from her, I can't even spend that thing. It just really reminds me, when we give Yahweh $1 million, what's that to him?
Nothing.
It's the heart. I know that a dollar to her is like $1,000 to me. That'd be like me giving somebody $1,000. Is that easy? No. Yahweh would call that a sweet, savoring aroma. And guess what you did? You took like an acorn and you stuck it in the ground. What's going to happen if an acorn grows? It's going to make a tree. Are you going to get more acorns back? You're going to get $100 back. That's a hundredfold. Yeah, I proclaim it. You're going to get big blessings. But Yahweh can compensate. When we read these things, whenever we read something that doesn't fit His, what are His attributes? You might have to help, Professor. What are Yahweh's attributes?
Justice, chesed, and righteousness.
Chesed is an obligatory covenant. It's justice. So whenever we read something that doesn't fit, we got to go, you don't take one little thing out of context. For instance, I know Lisette. If somebody told me a story, even if it was they showed me a video that was not in line with who she is, then I'm going to say, something's taken out of context. Mm-hmm. I don't have all the information here. I know the set is this. I don't know what this means, but I definitely know it doesn't mean this. If I know somebody very well, my brother or my brother-in-law, and all of a sudden somebody showed me a video footage of them doing something very unusual, it doesn't throw away the whole life that I do know. I just say, I don't know what this video or this recording means, but it definitely means it doesn't mean my brother-in-law is this. So when we read something in here, although it's Yahweh's word, it could be an error in translations. For a lot of people, it is what it is. But what we do is we're not sure what it is. You just set it to the side. Just don't come to conclusions with some unusual thing like that. Now, where are we? Okay, 1 Samuel chapter 15, verse 22. Which is real neat with this, what we're getting ready to read right here. Well, I'll try to stay on target. No. We're going to read 16, verse 7b, the second part of that. Wait. God looketh to. Chapter 16, 1 Samuel, 7b, 3 or 4. This is going to be before we read. It says, Elohim, or for God, looketh to. For man looketh to the outward appearance, but Yahweh looketh to the heart. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
This is when Yahweh's telling, he's going to go pick David out. Was David's heart right when he went to touch the ark with his servant? Yeah. Still there's something wrong. You can't just say, well, my heart's in the right spot. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen somebody go, well, my intentions were right? Well, David's intentions were right. Somebody died. What does it say in the 15th chapter, verse 22? Saul did sacrifices, giving these great sacrifices. Oh, here's for Yahweh. Then said Samuel, doth that which is pleasing unto Yahweh consist in ascending sacrifices, offerings and sacrifices, so much as it, as in hearkening unto the voice of Yahweh. If a parent says, I want you to mow the yard and clean the house, and then they leave and they come back and the kids have made birthday cards for them, but they didn't do what they said, is a parent happy?
No.
No. You obey. The children obey your parents, they have a long life, right? Ephesians 6 also says that too. Lo, to hearken is better, see the emphasis, than sacrifice. And to give heed, that's what those lines are, than the fat of rams. Yahweh wants obedience first. We know he wants a heart, but he wants obedience first. It still doesn't answer the question with Uzzah who died. Turn to Numbers chapter 4, 161. What in the world happened? Here's King David. Yahweh's anointed. Yahweh's the one appointed him. Yahweh said, is what he said, he's a man after my own heart. And a guy died trying to help him. And in Numbers chapter 4, and just for the audience and for record purposes, what you would read is verse 4 and 5 and 6. Did David have this book? Yes.
Oh, this?
Well, it was around. It had been written. This is the Pentateuch, the first five books.
Yeah.
Okay? Here's Yahweh's law. I'll read. Mom, why don't you read verse 4 through 8.
Okay. Thank you.
So here's going to be the rules concerning the Ark of the Covenant and the things that are inside it.
This shall be the labor of the sons of Kohath in the tent of meeting, the most holy things. So then Aaron and his sons shall enter when the camp is to set forward and take down the screening veil and enwrap therein the Ark of the Testimony and put thereon a covering of badger skin and spread a complete wrapper of blue over above and put it in the staves thereof. And over the presence table shall they spread a wrapper of blue and put thereon the dishes and the pans and the bowls and the libation cups. The perpetual bread also thereupon shall remain, and they shall spread over them a wrapper of crimson and cover the same with a covering of badger skin and shall put in the staves thereof.
The staves thereof. This is going to be for the Ark of the Covenant. You always tell them very specific. What I like to think of is when it came to Yahweh's Holy of Holies and the presence of Yahweh in the Ark of the Covenant, I think of it a lot like a nuclear reactor. You better be very sober. Anybody in this house knows that if you're going to be working on an electrical box, if you touch something, Yahweh didn't necessarily kill you. You didn't obey. You didn't have reverence for electricity. If any of us in here tried to mess with natural gas, I remember my mom did it. She asked me to go light the barbecue, and I was a spoiled brat teenager, and she didn't like to do it, and I had something going on, so my mom went out, and instead of lifting the lid to light the natural, she closed it, so it'd fill full of gas. She had it down, the gas turned on, she's pushing the light. Did anybody in here know what would happen if she would have lit it?
Boom, boom.
It would have blew up. She would have blew herself up. Uzzah killed himself. He didn't have reverence. Well, so Yahweh's going to say, you don't move the Ark of the Covenant except with staffs. The priest is supposed to carry it, just like actually it was in Raiders of the Lost Ark. Remember when Joshua, and they're carrying it, it's on the shoulders of the Levites. And Yahweh said, as soon as the Levite's foot touches the water, the Jordan will split. That's how you're supposed to carry this thing. Is it because Yahweh's just uptight? Maybe he knows a little bit about electricity, nuclear reactors. Can you imagine if somebody's going to go in and handle some plutonium without gloves or anything? You can't do that, right? We know that. The Levitical law, Moses and the priesthood, there's certain things you just don't mess with. And we're going to talk about something we don't mess with in today's society besides electricity, natural gas. Now in verse 15. So Yahweh is very specific. If you're going to tell somebody how to work on natural gas, actually, hey, if you're going to be working on natural gas, and go to YouTube and see how many YouTubes they're actually trying to help people work on their own natural gas lines. Probably not very many. You're going to get sued. People are going to die. You better be very careful. Same way with electricity. 15, so shall Aaron and his sons, verse 15, make an end of covering the sanctuary and the utensils of the sanctuary. When the camp is to set forward, and after that shall be the sons of Korah enter to bear it. Pause, which pause right there. I like to think of, you guys know what a hazmat suit is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You ever seen those suits that people wear, the biohazard suits? I believe that with the Levit, these people that are going to be carrying, it was a lot like that. There's a whole invisible world with reverence. Yahweh goes, don't mess with this. And he even warned the people, the land you're getting ready to inhabit, if you do what they did, the land's going to vomit you out. Don't do it. So he warned people, here's the consequences of these things. Okay, the sons of Kohath, was Uzziah a son of Kohath? I don't know. I don't think so. But they must not, would somebody finish reading that loudly?
Put forth a touch unto that which is holy, else should they die.
Should they what?
Die.
Did Uzzah know this? I don't think so. Do you think David, the man after Yahweh's own heart, knew this? No, he didn't know it. And if you keep reading in 2 Samuel 6, David doesn't know what to do. This is a very sobering moment. What if Uzzah's family was there? What in the world? All Israel's turning to David, and David goes, who can move this ark? So he put it in somebody else's house. Ignorance is not an excuse for all of us. Every one of us is going to go before Jesus Christ. We're going to watch a film, and I'd like to think this is that everybody's going to get to watch our film. We're going to be a new heaven and new earth for billions, more than billions and billions of years. I think we're going to get to check our lives. Hey, I want to read the life of Lisette or Donna or Aaron. Here's Aaron. Don't do it, Aaron! Oh, man, Aaron has a big mouth. But you'll read that David went someplace, cool off. What do you think he did? He probably would look back at Yahweh's attributes. Yahweh didn't kill righteous people. What the heck's going on here? What would David have done? Okay. He would have read Numbers. Mm. How in the world did we miss that, guys? Uzzah is dead. And guess what happened? They went back, they got the staff, or they got the ark, and Yahweh gave them the green light. Because who had the Ark of the Covenant, this guy's house was blessed. You can just think of the Garden of Eden in the middle of a desert. This is what this guy's house looked like. David would have been, Yahweh didn't kill his servants. What's going on here? We messed up. There's something we don't know. We would have read the Levitical law. Don't you touch it. We blew it, guys. His good intentions is not an excuse. King David taught this in Numbers? As far as we know, no. Maybe. I don't think he forgot it. He could have. Was Uzzah taught this law?
No.
As far as we know, we don't. As far as we know, his parents and grandparents didn't know this. They weren't taught it.
Every king was supposed to read the law, though.
Yeah, they're supposed to. But I don't think David forgot this. Now with his reverence towards Yahweh, something happened. He missed it. Was David taught this? Not as far as we know, I don't think so. Was Uzzah taught this? I don't think so. It's not something you forget about. Was ignorance an excuse?
No.
But Dad's right. Every king was supposed to know this, but in order to know that every king's supposed to be taught the whole law, somebody's got to be teaching the law. And they weren't. And so even in our cases, sometimes we feel like if everybody's not teaching this, well, then I'm innocent. Not necessarily. And you can say, no. Yahweh is looking at each one of us going, what will you do? He's looking at you going, what will you do? What will you do? Well, nobody's following me. It was a neat thing my dad had me read last night before the basketball game. Our job is not to convince people of Yahweh's word. Our job is not to get people to follow us. Our job is to follow Yahweh. That's it. Well, what if my family doesn't follow me? Yahweh will reward you. What if my friends don't follow me? Yahweh will replace it. He will meet all your needs according to his riches and glory. Philippians 4:19. If you do his word. What if all my peers reject me? Then, and so a lot of times what we do is, and that was actually Joseph Rotherham that wrote that. None of my peers want this. Our job isn't to convince our peers. Our job is to follow Yahweh. What did you do? And all of us are going to go before Yahushua, and we're going to be graded. We'll get in. We'll be rewarded for every act of obedience. Every act of obedience. I was at work, and I was daydreaming, thinking about Facebook. And all of a sudden, the word came to me and said, Aaron, you know that there will be zero rewards for slothfulness. I'm like, slothfulness? What's slothfulness?
That's looking at Facebook during work hours.
I'm not going to be rewarded for that. Yahweh, it's all about rewards. Rewards. We're going someplace, grace. If we're thinking about where we're going, then we got to go, man, what's going on with this? King David, what he did, why he was successful, is he was able to get tunnel vision. Get tunnel vision right on Yahweh. That's all I care about. Well, no, I care about other things too. But if I only get to bless one entity, David said it's going to be Yahweh. It's going to be God of the Hebrews. Well, and then if you think about it, just logically, he's the only one that can reward us.
Yeah.
He's the only one that can compensate. All these things in this life will be gone. Oh man, I can't take any of this stuff. And so you get tunnel vision. And there's no way to the Father except through the Son. Now, they weren't taught the words. Now I'm gonna kind of veer off. I lost my voice, so this won't be very good. But you guys ever heard somebody sing a song and the melody was right, but the words were wrong?
Me.
I heard, here's a good one. I mean, I'm gonna play the guitar better than that. He was a Mexican immigrant before he became a citizen. And he thought that our national anthem was about a Mexican guy. This is no joke. Do you know why?
Jose,
can you see? He thought the beginning was Jose. What is the beginning of our national anthem?
Jose,
can you see? Does that make sense? Do you start a sentence with Jose, can you see? Is that a complete sentence? Does it make sense? No, but we keep it, don't we?
It's a sound.
So, but if somebody kept, the first time somebody got it and said, Jose, can you see? At first it's cute, right? What happens if I don't change though? And I keep singing it.
It becomes truth.
It becomes irritating. You ever know somebody that's singing the wrong lyrics to your song? I did that when there was a song about like the desert mist rains. You guys know that song?
No.
Some chorus like the desert mist rains, something like that. Anyways, I was in college and I kept singing like a desert masquerade. And I was singing it. Like I heard it. I was just singing like a desert masquerade until finally my roommate turned to me. He's going to choke me. He goes, it's like a desert misses the rain. The desert misses the rain. It's not a desert masquerade. A desert. I'm like, oh, who cares? It mattered to him. Does it irritate you guys if somebody puts the wrong words in it? Yeah. At first it might be cute, but after a while it's not cute anymore. As you say, so even if somebody has the right melody, if the words mean something. And even with the national anthem, can you see, can you start an English paper with that, the beginning of that sentence?
Actually.
If you did that in English, you're gonna get an F. And now that's not how you start off a sentence. Now poems, here's another one, a poem with good intention. So that would be this Mexican guy singing about Jose. He's gonna die for our country and whoever Jose was. It's cute at first. Then it's not cute when you start teaching it. The poem would have been, what about a poem? And I'm going to talk about Aaron in third persons because you guys can see me. What if somebody got up and said, I want to do a poem about Aaron and his life. It's his birthday tomorrow. And they start off and they say, Aaron is very animated. You guys probably, Aaron is very loud. Right? And Aaron's beard goes down to his knees. No, Aaron didn't have a beard. But if somebody kept teaching a poem talking about Aaron's beard and they had good intentions, at first it's funny. It is? Well, at first.
Yeah, exactly.
But what if you're sitting around at dinner at a Cracker Barrel or something and somebody starts saying, oh, I know all about Aaron. He's got a beard down to his knees. And they start telling other people about Aaron's beard. Is that going to bless you guys?
No.
What's it going to do?
Upset.
It's going to upset. It's going to irritate you. You're going to say, no, it's not funny anymore. Are their intentions in the right spot? Yeah, I was at IHOP, one thing. And here's these beautiful melodies. They were beautiful. And they started singing these songs. Somebody put songs in there that sounded so nice. And then they put blasphemy in it. About Yahweh and Jesus Christ. And then the melody came back. And it says, Yahweh just takes your stuff away. Yahweh took this. He's talking about people's lives. Mm. Sounds nice. The melody's beautiful. People love the melody. Who's in the room when they're singing it?
Yahweh.
So is Jesus Christ. We love you. Can you imagine if somebody gets your drink, ting, 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 at my birthday party. Everybody come in here. I want to do an ode to Aaron. And he starts talking about things that Aaron's beard and Aaron loves to write and read poetry. And all Aaron does is read books all weekend long. You guys, this guy doesn't even know Aaron. Don't say you love Aaron. And so that these Christian songs, actually, I believe Satan finds a really good melody. Because people want the melody, and the melodies are like sugar. And then he infiltrates it with something that is not about Yahweh. So here's these people thinking, this song's beautiful. Then you go, this song is blasphemous. Well, you know our intentions. David had good intentions. And to say, actually, even if you were singing a song about me, or if you were singing a song about Lisette, and somebody said, Lisette, all Lisette liked to do was something that was 180 degrees that wasn't her, that would actually irritate me. I don't care what the melody sounds like. It'd bother me. No, don't sing it to me. I believe there's many Christian songs, probably 70%, where Jesus Christ goes, because you're insulting his father. The song, God is in control, where is it? It's not in there. Good intentions?
Yeah.
Yeah. Until a little girl gets raped. Until a Christian gets beheaded. Somebody gets blown up. He's in control of that? That's an accessory to murder. That didn't bless Jesus Christ, especially when it comes to his father. Now we're turning to Shakespeare. Shakespeare, who here read Hamlet?
Dina.
Just one? Nobody else read Hamlet?
Dina did for me.
Anybody watch Hamlet? Mel Gibson? Okay, in Hamlet, here's Shakespeare, he's one of the greatest writers ever, English writers. This guy has a skull in his hand. And he looks at the skull. What's he say?
I don't remember.
Et tu, Brute.
Et tu, Brute. That's Julius Caesar. He has a skull in his hand. He's one of the most famous of Shakespeare's. He's right after Romeo and Juliet. He looks at the skull and he says, to be
or not to be.
Or not to be.
That is the question.
That is the question. What does that mean?
Idea.
He has no idea. So if I'm going to be teaching Isaiah, or any of you guys who've never read Hamlet, to be or not to be, that is a question. What does that mean? I don't know. I don't know. Give me the cliff notes. And you can do that. But anybody who's actually read Shakespeare, which I'm very thankful to my English teacher, Mr. Huddleston, he forced me to do it. He was very smart. He gave me extra credit if I memorized the beginning of it. Extra credit? Man, that's like a Twinkie, baby. So I memorized, and all of a sudden he goes, the guy's father was murdered. He's trying to find out who the murderer is. The love of his life is pursuing him. But he met his ghost of his father who says, avenge me, find out who this is. And he's trying to figure out what's going on here. He can't have his wife. He just lost his dad. He doesn't know who to trust, and he's contemplating suicide. It's not worth it. He's thinking about killing himself. And so Shakespeare writes, to be or not to be. What does that mean?
Die or stay alive.
Well, why didn't he just say, should I kill myself? Because it doesn't communicate what was going on with Shakespeare. So we have, so anybody who reads Shakespeare goes, he is contemplating. And anybody, you don't mess with Shakespeare. Well, what happens if they don't understand Shakespeare? You say, you change. Don't change Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. Like my teacher did me. To be or not to be. I thought of another one. Here's, you guys are Romeo and Juliet?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, a little bit on a lighter subject, kind of, until you get to the end. Here's Juliet. She's sitting out on her balcony, and she says, Romeo, Romeo, why are you a cow? It's the right melody, right? No, wherefore art
thou?
What does that mean? What does that mean? You have no idea, do you? Would somebody please communicate to him what that means?
Where are you?
Where are you, Romeo?
Calling.
Why in the world did Shakespeare write it so weird? And then why do people not change what he said? That's just ridiculous. Or is it poetry? It's poetry. We think about the preamble of the Constitution. Who would like to come up here and volunteer?
Me.
Okay. Why don't you look at this, you can hold it, and read it with all your heart, and look at the camera. This is the 13 colonies who are going to do a declaration. They're going to declare a war to the greatest military on the planet. These 13 colonies. What do they say?
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish domestic
tranquility,
provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessing of liberty to ourselves and the prosperity to order, and establish the Constitution for the United States of America.
Okay, you stay here if you want to volunteer again. Can you start an English paper? Teachers, Shauna's in another room. She's an English teacher. We have one right here. Can you start a sentence with "We the People"?
Yes, you can.
How many sentences does it? Oh, I get you could. Mm-hmm. You could reorganize the words too, but usually you're not going to start off with "We the People." That's not how you start a sentence. Not normally. Well, today, if we were going to try to communicate what this means. "We the People." You would actually say, "The United States of America and its people," would be an easier way. Does that make more sense to you? The United States, okay, instead of "We the People," the United States.
The people of the United States.
Why did the writers of this document start off with "We the People"?
To make a point.
Because it was the most important point.
It's a big point. Because what they were doing that was different from where they came, they're saying, "We the people are giving authority to the government." They came from a government where the government gave authority. And they're going, no. "We the people," did they put those words in there for a reason?
Yes.
If we were to change the preamble of the Constitution, what would happen with anybody who knew history? They'd probably smack you in the face. Mm-hmm. No. You don't. Well, I'm like Elijah. Just say the United States of America and its people. Who would love that? Democrats. Mm. Because what's happening is in this preamble of the Constitution, they're saying the people have authority over the government. Therefore, the government can't take away our rights. Our rights came from God. Like today, what they would say, a living, breathing Constitution, they're going to say, no, rights come from government, therefore we can take it away. No, that's exactly what they got away from. What would happen if we just started trying to alter these words around because the people around us didn't understand it? Maybe there's some new immigrants, right? If the writers of this document heard us messing with this, what would they say? The people who put their lives on the line, there are millionaires in our time that put everything on the line. They didn't have to. George Washington was very well off. Benjamin Franklin, John Adams, they were putting everything on the line basically for the peasants after them. Kind of like Donald Trump right now. He didn't need this job. Yeah. He's doing it for us and for his kids. If we were to change it, if they were to listen to us butcher this, they'd be very, very offended. They put those words there for a very particular purpose. Here's another one. Here's the Star Spangled Banner. Here's our national anthem. This is the most famous part of the song. This is where people do their solos. Read this.
In the stars.
The yellow. Or
the land of the free, and the home of the brave.
Or the land of the free and the home of the brave. What does that mean?
The land of the free and the home of the brave?
Over.
It means over. He didn't even make sense. If we had immigrants coming in here, we have an immigrant here, we got another immigrant right there. What does this mean? Who's Jose? Why do you say or the land? What or is between two things. No, they're saying or, like over, but here's this word. Do we change our constitution or preamble, or do we change our national anthem because people aren't understanding it?
No.
No. Do we sing a song, or do we force our children to sing a song they might not understand? Until finally they go, what the heck does this mean? Or the land of the free. What would happen, the guy who wrote this, do you know where he was when he wrote this?
Slave ship.
He was in a ship in a prison.
Yeah.
He was in a prison watching the rockets bursting in air. He was watching all this, and this little bitty continent, this little bitty state was fighting the greatest military on the planet. The sun didn't set on the British Empire. How are they going to win? They didn't know. They weren't fighting because they could win. They were fighting on a matter of principle. They're standing up for something. And this guy's watching. He's seeing boom, boom, boom. Who's going to win? Who's going to win? He had no idea. I don't think he's a slave ship. It's a military prison, a floating prisons. And he's watching. And the only way he could tell who could win or who lost, because all odds were against him, is when the smoke cleared and the morning came up, what did he see? The flag was still there. If that man who wrote this, that experienced this, thank you very much, he experienced it, he went through it, saw us start changing these words, how would he feel?
Breaks heart.
I was there, man. You're taking a while out of the experiment or the experience. I was there when I wrote this. Every word has a meaning. So when we teach the Constitution, when we teach Shakespeare, when we do our whatever that thing's called,
anthem,
our national anthem, we sing it. We teach it anyways. And if people don't understand it, is you say you ask questions and then we'll communicate. But we do not water this thing down because it's a sacred document, at least from a government standpoint. So if somebody was going to water down those things, we would stop them to say, don't do it. Do you think people with good intentions have probably tried to? Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Let me show you another example of somebody changing some things. Now, this is a comparative study Bible. There's four different translations. I bought four before I had the Rotherham, so I could compare some things. And we're just going to see, look at an example. Okay, here is King James on 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Okay? And then we're going to compare four different translations and see if they all fit. Now concerning the things whereof you wrote unto me, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. So there's a Greek word for each one of these. They're supposed to be, and they're translated into English. Amplified says it's good for a man not to touch a woman. Those two agree? New American Standard. It is good for a man not to touch a woman. Are all those agreed?
Mm-hmm.
NIV. It is good for a man not to marry. Is that the same?
No.
What did they do? They changed Yahweh's word with good intentions, right in front of Yahweh. If we were to change Shakespeare right in front of Shakespeare, what would he say? Well, then the NIV, the people that read it, go, well, what they're trying to explain is they're trying to communicate this to kids. And they're going to, every word on here has meaning. Just like our national anthem, just like our Star Spangled Banner. Yahweh didn't say Mary. And they go, well, does that even make sense? No, it does make sense. Does or the land of the free make sense? No. And the Yahweh's going to tell us, grow up. Read the chapter. Read the chapter before it. Chapter 6 is saying sexual immorality, that to touch a woman like a wife outside of marriage is sexual immorality. If you want to touch a woman like a wife, you get married. And he even said before that, know you not that your body is the temple of the living God, the naos of the living God? Every sin is outside the body except for sexual immorality. Therefore, flee sexual immorality or fornication. And then it goes on to say, it's good for a man not to touch a woman. What's the context? If you want to touch her, like a wife, what do?
Marry.
You marry her. So what's the do we have problems in today's society about guys cohabiting? How about guys and girls sleeping over? They're just living together. Well, that's not sex. Yahweh said it right here, don't touch her like a wife. What did they do? They just changed it. Will they be innocent for it? No, they won't. So then there's a lot of other areas where you just compare NIV, you can compare the King James, and you go, holy smokes, these guys are just butchering it right in front of the author. And they're going, well, it doesn't even make sense. What if I told you that, what if there was a chance that you could get the Apostle Paul's Bible with the things that were underlined?
His notes?
With the things that he highlighted.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen your dad's Bible?
Yeah.
Are the things underlined? Are those things important? Yeah. So if you want to get an idea of what's important to your dad, you get his Bible. Say, look what he underlined. Wow. That'd be pretty neat. What if you could get the Apostle Paul's Bible? Would that be neat? To see what was underlined. How about Moses' Bible? Would you like to see what was underlined in Moses' Bible?
Everything.
not necessarily. Yahweh underlines things in his Bible. And how does he do it? I love you. Where's the emphasis?
You.
I. You, I love. Same words, different order. You, I love, where's the emphasis?
You.
You. I love you, emphasis is on Yahweh all throughout his word, and anybody who read ancient Hebrew or Greek could see by the way he puts the words, he's putting emphasis. Is that, you guys ever read Shakespeare? We just did. The way you arrange the words is how you bring emphasis to certain words. Every other translation took Yahweh's words and they whited out all his underlines. They got rid of all his highlights except for Rothery. And he puts double brackets over the things with the author going, this is what Yahweh emphasized. I love you. And you can see he even did it as an explanation in the emphasized Bible going, where you put the words means a lot. Well, tomato, tomato, the author is in the room. Don't mess with it. Well, you could flip it over and just grab a random page. In the Rotherham, you can grab a random page and you can see the emphasis. And you can read and say, here's where the emphasis is. I've just grabbed a random, here's Psalm 17, verse 12. And I know when to use my diaphragm because he has put the lines. And he's going to show you for the regular reader. We should know it anyways, but he's going to make it really easy. He just highlights it. Yeah. In likeness is a lion that longeth to rend. And as a young lion lurketh in secret places, rise, Yahweh. How did I know in likeness? Because it's underlined. Every other translation has got rid of Yahweh's highlights, his underlines. The order, we look at it and go, man, but it's so hard to read. I was the same way when I was 19. I couldn't read the... I thought, man, the King James is so hard. It's so... and then my 7-year-old read 22 chapters of the Rotherham in 1901. And so I'm like, okay, but the idea is... Rotherham preserved it all. And what happens is people go, what does it really matter? And here's another one. It says, here's an example. Yahweh loves a cheerful giver. Anybody know what scripture that is?
A good one.
Second Corinthians. It says God loves a cheerful giver. You guys ever heard that? I'm going to take the same words. Here's the NIV. Tomato, tomato. We're just going to make this nice and easy for the people to understand. Jose, can you see? Jose, can you see? What does it matter? Let's just start changing these words so people will accept it, right? Yahweh loves a cheerful giver. Where's the emphasis? Yahweh, right? We're going to take the same word. We're going to say, a cheerful giver loves Yahweh. It's the same words. Did that change the meaning? When you're reading the NIV... And the NASB, the King James, the New Living, you're reading something that's butchering Yahweh's word right in front of them. And they do this here and there and here, and they're going, hey, we're just trying to sell Bibles. Is that any excuse? No. And so what Rotherham does, and he's not perfect, but probably 90% of it, he's going to show you, here what accuracy is, here's where these things are, and we say, golly, you say, our objective would be, like what Rotherham was saying at the very beginning, it was, let's see here, oh, page 219, turn there as I wrap up.
In the old?
In the Greek test, in the Greek manuscripts. I don't like to say old or new because that's not in the scriptures.
No.
So why in the world are new translations changing things? Why are songs telling people, saying things that aren't in the word? Why are they doing that?
The adversary.
Chapter 4, 2 Timothy. And in the two, 1 Timothy and 2 Timothy. 1 Timothy, it appears like everything's going fantastic. Timothy, like a son to Paul. The church is going great. First book. All right, 1 Timothy. 2 Timothy, he's saying, don't be a coward. Who here likes to be called a coward? Do you think that hurt Timothy to read that?
Yeah.
It says over here in verse 7, for Yahweh hath not given us a spirit of cowardice. To be called a coward? Why would anybody be... Paul's going to call what's going on in 2 Timothy, chapter 4, verse 3. What's happening to Timothy? Tim, would you read that?
4, verse 3?
And 4.
Okay. For there will be a season when the healthful teachings they will not endure, but according to their own covetings will unto themselves heap up teachers, because they have an itching ear. And from the truth, indeed, their ear will they turn away, while unto stories will they turn themselves aside.
So here, what were the people that Timothy was teaching? What did they want?
Their own doctrine.
Stories. Mm-hmm. Their own itching ears. They wanted to say, while unto stories they will turn away. Who here has heard of the movie Heaven's for Real?
Yeah.
It's about a little boy who died and went to heaven. He came back with revelation that's not in the Bible. You know what that's called? A prophet.
No.
Paul said if anybody adds to this book, he's accursed. The book's complete. And now this little boy is a prophet. He came back and says, here's what heaven looks like. Here's where people are. Here's what they look like. Here's what grandpa. Here's their ages of everybody. And I don't think the little boy, I think it was his father. How many books did he sell?
Millions.
Millions.
That was all.
How many people liked the movie? Christians loved it!
Because it, yeah.
What does the scripture say? What did it say? What did Peter say in Acts 2? He said, where is David? He is not ascended to the heavens, but he's a dead and he's asleep. When Stephen died, where did it say he went? Asleep. At First Thessalonians 4 says, my brother, be not ignorant concerning those who have fallen asleep. Heaven's for real is going to be a doctrine of demons. Mm-hmm. Yahweh says the hope is not death right now. Man teaches as soon as you die, you go to heaven. Well, let's just commit suicide. Let's just jump on a grenade. Well, you can't do that. Hey, make up your mind. Is death the way to heaven? Is that what people teach today?
Yeah.
Yeah, right? So if all your family dies and goes to heaven, what's the only thing between you and them?
Air.
Your life.
Yeah.
What does Yahweh say about death? It is... First Corinthians 15, it is an enemy. It is not. Who does Yahweh say our hope is? Death? No, it's an enemy. The hope is the return of the King. In a moment, in a twinkling of an eye, he's going to come back. You know, say, so why do people want that? Or why are these translations? They're called itching ear translations. And we should look at it and go, everybody's going that direction. It's because that's what they want. Our job is not to convince people. It's not to get people to follow us. It's our job is to follow Yahweh and Jesus Christ. And every act of obedience, it matters. And every time somebody rejects you and says, I'm not going with you. I don't like you anymore. You're mean. You have hate speech. Who's watching? What would happen if the author of our Star Spangled Banner was alive and he saw you say, don't change this word. People died. And everybody who experienced this war cried when they read this, because this thing happened. If we knew the people that wrote this were alive and listening to us, that experienced this, will we have reverence towards it? Well, I'm here to tell you, there's somebody alive that experienced all of this. When his apostles died, when Daniel was most likely turned into a eunuch, did Yahweh's heart break? Oh, golly! When Jeremiah's thrown down, Yahweh is looking at all these things and he's telling the story and here's all of his words. He's going, preserve the word. Preserve the word. Joshua 24:15. I'll wrap up. We won't go there. It's one of my favorites. It says, I was reading Joshua at the end of the book of Joshua. What does he say? He tells them, you guys can't serve Yahweh. You can't. No, we want to serve Yahweh. No, you can't. He gets in an argument with these people before he dies. He's getting ready to go to sleep. We will serve Yahweh. He goes, no, Yahweh's a jealous God. You guys got all these other gods. Well, what gods do Americans have?
Government.
I got a social security God. I got a child support God. I have an alimony God. I got a disability God. They give me what I need as long as I vote right. And Yahweh's going to say, love your neighbor as yourself. Covet not thy neighbor's goods. Where did that money come from? The nation's in debt. Where did that money come from? Don't tell me where it came from. They did the same thing in Nazi Germany. They gave. Where did the money come from? Well, don't ask. We just came out of depression. Joshua 24:15. Joshua says, as for me and my house, I'll serve Yahweh. And so Joseph Rotherham, and you think about this guy, is that he was studying the Word. He was a wordsmith. He was an editor. And as he kept reading the Word, guess what happened? The more he read Yahweh's Word, the farther away all the people around him that he loved, the people that said they loved Jesus Christ and Yahweh, this distance, they started getting farther and farther away. And he had to leave one denomination. He became a Baptist. Because then he found out that, well, wait a minute, this doesn't line up in the Word. This type of baptism doesn't work out. So then he had to leave that church. And they left like two churches. And his wife goes, honey, I'm with you wherever you go. This is Joseph Rotherham in the beginning when he did this Bible. But she goes, well, how many times do we have to change? We started off in this church. The guy used to walk to church like 6 miles a day. And here's like a Methodist. I forget all the different denominations. And then he found they weren't right. Then they found out they were right. And he goes, and the wife goes, how many times have we got to change? And Rotherham says, we change until we're right. His name's not the Lord. His name's Yahweh. Christians don't like that. Well, do you know, Jews don't like us saying Jesus Christ. And you know, that's one of the reasons why Christ is being removed. Jews don't like Jesus and Christ put together. Why? Because it's saying that Jesus is the Messiah. And Jews will say he's not the Messiah. We better get that out of there so we don't want to offend them. And I'm going to say, if somebody's offended by Lisette's name, they don't like it, she's in the room, and say, well, you can be offended. That's her name. But for me and my house, we'll change, we'll serve Yahweh. And if our family rejects us, Jesus Christ says, who is my brother and who is my sister? Those who do the Word. So as far as I know, Lisette is closer than some of my family members. Mm-hmm. She wants to know the Word, right? So is Troyce. So there's some of these other people. Some of these people are watching. And we say, like the Star Spangled Banner, like the Constitution, we go, golly, this doesn't even make sense. You can imagine the immigrants coming to the United States specifically with what's going on now. Do you think people want to change the Constitution now? Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, but it was designed. Every single word was there for a reason. So when people don't understand it, we say, you change. You don't change the Word. Amen. Immigrants come here. You change and learn the history of the United States about this war and what it was founded upon. You don't change the song. Then when you go to the Constitution, you change. You don't change the Constitution. When it doesn't make sense, then grow up. Get into it. And the neat thing is that when we do grow up, Yahweh does love our heart. And as soon as, what happened with David? A guy died. Can you imagine David? Uzzah was just as guilty. It wasn't just David. There are people everywhere. Why didn't anybody know numbers? Well, you can't change that. But what happens is that, I guess I'll close there.